This morning's reading is a poem by Mary Oliver called The Sunflowers. Come with me into the field of sunflowers. Their faces are burnished discs. Their dry spines creak like ship masts. Their green leaves, so heavy and many, fill all day with the sticky sugars of the sun. Come with me to visit the sunflowers. They are shy but want to be friends. They have wonderful stories of when they were young, the important weather, the wandering crows. Don't be afraid to ask them questions. Their bright faces, which follow the sun, will listen. Those rows of seeds, each one a new life, hope for a deeper acquaintance. Each of them, though it stands in a crowd of many, like a separate universe, is lonely. The long work of turning their lives into a celebration is not easy. Come and let us talk with those modest faces, the simple garments of leaves, the coarse roots in the earth so uprightly burning. It has been hot, really hot this week, oppressively so, at least for me. We wear sunscreen, take to the shade, and make sure to drink water and check on our elder neighbors. The sun can be a fearful thing, but there is more to the story than just sunburn, heat stroke, and my poor wilted daisies. There is a story of life, life so abundant that only our verdant, perfectly placed planet can hold it. In fact, the summer solstice has just passed, the time when the sun is at its highest, when the day is longest and the night made short. While our brother and sister Unitarian Universalists have been at Justice General Assembly, the solstice came and went. And I am here to tell you that the summer solstice is a religiously lonely event. Spiritually and religiously, the winter solstice gets all the play. In the Catholic tradition in which I was raised, we celebrated Advent in December, the weeks before Christmas, or the solstice, were a time of reflection, a necessary corrective to the madness of the shopping season. In earth-based spiritual practice, the winter solstice, with its shortest day and longest night, is the moment par excellence for stillness and silence. It is about the deepening dark, dreaming seeds, and the return of dawn's first most delicate fingers. I light the house with candles, turn off all electric lights, and contemplate the mysteries of the dark. But what do we do for summer solstice? What are the mysteries of the light? There is no need for candles. There's no time of festival, no special dances in the fields, no ceremonial feast, except today. Unless we consider the swimming pool our dancing ground and the barbecue grill our altar of ritual feasting. Still, I think these weeks have things to tell us. I think the strong, straight overhead sun has things to say, questions to ask. What is the center that gives me abundant life? Life that flows over into blessings for others. And what story does that center tell in the unfolding of my life? Late last month, I saw catalpa flowers spinning down from the 50-foot height of a tree across the street from my office. This tree and every other living thing is a story about the sun. I saw the sun in the catalpa tree, the atmosphere the sun makes possible, the rain it provides, even the nitrogen it holds in the air. If we look, we can see the sun-governed water cycle, nourishing the tree's roots, the oxygen cycle, where the tree exchanges oxygen for visiting sparrows' carbon dioxide. Breathe in, breathe out, and imagine the great catalpa breathing back carbon dioxide into the green-making engines of its leaves. The sun is at work, giving life to all these earthbound cousins of ours, and all of us together. And just so, I see the life-giving sun within each of us. I see it in smiles shared between strangers. I hear it in the passionate pitch of voices raised together, singing for justice. And I feel it in the silence after a great musician finishes playing, but the audience has not yet applauded. The sun above is a reflection of the sun within. And in DC, as in other parts of the country, the sun above is hard to ignore. Just as the dark is unavoidable in winter, so the light and heat of the sun are unavoidable now. So what else do we know about this unavoidable star? It gives life. We know the sun makes the rain fall, makes the leaves green, and has a radiant hand in nearly all we experience. And we know that it is bright and hot. Where then is our brightness, our heat, our unique light? What and where is the sun, the center and origin of our life? The center of our life is found where we are in the flow, where we do what we were born to do, moving without a thought. And unfortunately, we tend to discount what we're best at, or what comes most easily, or what we most enjoy. The only things worth anything are things that come with difficulty. And maybe we think that whatever is hard for us, be it writing well, or exercising every day, or keeping a clean house, in my case, maybe we think that only what we experience as drudgery will make us real, accomplished, or valuable. But this mindset leads only to striving and struggling and dissatisfaction. Let's think then about the places we do shine. What about the activities, even the difficult ones, that make us more alive, joyful, and centered? These are the ways of being that center us. These deeds we do almost without thinking. These come from the orbit of our interior sun, from our center. They may be hard for others, but as close as breath for you. Maybe for you, cleaning house is a way to bring order out of chaos. And maybe that satisfies something deep within you, something good. Not for me, maybe. But for you. And the point is, every single human being has something in them that can shine and give gifts. And Marianne Williamson famously said, "It is this life-giving light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." We are often unwilling to shine as brightly as the summer sun. We may have been taught to hide our light under a bushel basket. We may even intentionally hide the bright star at our center. We cloud our inner skies with nasty messages. I'm not good enough or quick enough or smart or pretty enough. And so we keep the rays of our personal sun hidden from view. Or we believe that by shying away from our own brilliance, we will in fact make others more comfortable, not be too radical or too out there or just plain too much. In fact, it is precisely by being ourselves in all our brilliance that we help others find their own. I have a story about my own fears of finding my center and about how fear kept me from considering a life where my own light might shine. One November day, I sat in a cafe in downtown DC with my wife, Julie. We had been to church here, and I was talking about how much I admired the work of ministers. I spoke about their schedules, busy, varied, overwhelming, their writing and preaching, the way they connected with others, and the variety of work they did. And I took a deep breath and I said, "Oh, I so wish I could do that work." And Julie said, "Honey, you can." I grabbed the edge of the table. I was dizzy. It somehow hadn't occurred to me that I could actually live the life I most desired. But I had always wanted a life in which spirituality, justice, and the daily unfolding of community came together. I had spent so many years rummaging around trying to figure out what I could reasonably do that I hadn't listened to my own heart. I hadn't realized that each of us already has the seeds within us to do what we were born to do. I was afraid. I had never dared to pay attention to what I most longed for, to turn my face toward the sun of my life. But what might we do if we weren't afraid to try? What might I do, and could I take the risk? At that time, I was 35 years old, finishing my BA. I graduated 20 years almost to the day that I graduated from high school. I was studying religion, ethics, and myth, but I still didn't know what I was doing. It will take a long time to become a minister, and there are many steps between here and there. Nonetheless, I realized in that coffee shop that if I wanted to be true to my heart, I had to put my foot on the path. I had to respect the orbit of my life. Earth's orbit winds around our sun, whose name is Sol, like solar. This season, when the days are longest, we can consider what this strong young star has to say to us. Without our sun, our living planet would not exist. And these weeks, I think about the life the sun gives, the life with which it blesses us, the life with which you bless me. Where is our brilliance, and how is it blessing the world? What is the fiery heart of our life? That's one idea. And how do we find that fiery heart? Pedro Arrupe, a Jesuit priest, has some excellent advice on this front. "Nothing is more practical," he says, "than finding God. That is to say, than falling in love in a quite absolute and final way. Fall in love," he says. "Stay in love, and it will decide everything." Fall in love. Stay in love, and it will decide everything. So the question is, what do I love? What do I most truly, madly, deeply love? What do I love so much that I'm willing to let it decide everything? By surrendering to love, we feel our way towards our deepest hopes, and we learn what we would do and who we would be if we were not afraid. Fall in love, stay in love, and let it decide everything. And that admonition to fall in love leads to what Mary Oliver called in our reading the long work of celebration. This is the work of the sunflowers, and it is our work as well. This is what the plants are doing when they stretch and turn towards the sun. They are turning themselves into beauty and fruitfulness and toward the long legacy of the future. And better yet, they face their golden petals straight on towards the center and source of their lives, and they turn when they need to. They turn to keep following where that source leads, to make a celebration of the life they have been given. It was Julie's words in that cafe that helped me imagine my life as the work of celebration. A word from her opened a space in the clouds so I could see the sun. And my sense of that moment was like God becoming clear, inviting me into something new. As though breaking through clouds, through fog, or perhaps through drifting pollen, depending on the year, I could see. Something previously obscured by fear shone through, and while I don't know what the future holds, I know enough now to follow where that light is leading. But a caution, we can refuse to follow the light within us. How are we hiding from what can most give us life? Martha Graham, that brilliant dancer, says there is a vitality, a life force translated through us into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, that expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any medium and will be lost. She warns us that if we do not clear our inner skies, the light we have within us will never bless the world. Our own deepest, quietest hopes and our most passionate loves will go unrealized. Finally, the way toward the life-giving rays of the sun within us is not found by trying to be anyone else. Not Martha Graham, not Father Arupe, not Mother Teresa, or even Ralph Waldo Emerson. Even the most dedicated, helpful mentors can only ask us questions, only show us what they have, not give us ourselves. I am the only one who can find myself, that shining inner light within me. And you are the only one who can find that light within you. So let us consider the life-giving sun above, the life-giving sun within. And let us dare to consider both their pervasive life-giving powers. God herself, the spirit of life and of love, is revealed in many ways. And I see God, the creative force of the universe, reflected not only in the sky, in me, and in you. May we all honor our brilliance, the brilliance of one another, reflected in the summer sun. Blessed be, and amen.